Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter number 6, the activities of Lord Rishabhade, text number 5. Kama, Manyu, Mada, Lobha, Shoka, Moha, Bhaya, Adaya, Karma Bandha, Cha, Yat, Mula, Srikuryat, Ka, Nu, Tat, Buddha, Kamo Manyur Mado Lobha, Shokamo Bayadaya, Karma Bandhaschayan Mula, Svikuryat Konu Tad Buddha, Kamo Manyur Mado Lobha, Shokamo Bayadaya, Karma Bandhaschayan Mula, Svakuryat Konu Tad Buddha, Kamo Manyur Mado Lobha, Shokamoha Bayadaya, Karma Bandhaschayan Mula, Svakuryat Konu Tad Buddha. Kama, lust. Manyu, anger. Mada, pride. Lobha, greed. Shoka, lamentation. Moha, illusion. Bhaya, fear. Adaya, all these together. Karma bandha, bondage to fruitive activity. Cha, and yat, mula, the origin of which. Svakuryat, would accept. Kaha, who? Nu, indeed. Tat, that mind. Buddha, if one is learned. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedantati Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. The mind is the root cause of lust, anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. Combined, these constitute bondage to fruitive activity. What learned man would put faith in the mind? Purport. The mind is the original cause of material bondage. It is followed by many enemies, such as anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. The best way to control the mind is to engage it always in Krishna consciousness. Svayamana Krishna Padaravindayo. Since the followers of the mind bring about material bondage, we should be very careful not to trust the mind. Om Jnanate Manandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Shakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shivarve Namah. So the mind has many disciples, many followers. The difficulty is the mind is a bogus guru. If we become the disciples of our mind, then we become victimized by lust, anger, greed, pride, lamentation, illusion, fear, etc., etc., etc. This is just the tip of the iceberg here. It's not a very nice position to be follower of the mind. Specifically, the terminology used in this verse is putting faith in the mind. We hear the term faith in terms of religious faith, for example. Shraddha is the Sanskrit word. Putting faith. Our nature is to put faith in something, actually. We cannot avoid that. Someone may say, well, I will not put faith in anything. But you know, when they do that, they're putting faith in skepticism. Everyone, by nature, we put faith. If I say, I will not put my faith in anything, then I am putting my faith in the process of not putting faith in anything, which is another way of putting faith. So we cannot avoid putting faith, either in something positive or in the negation of putting faith. That is another way of putting faith. Our nature is to put faith. If we do not know where to put faith, if we are not trained, if we are not educated, if we are not enlightened by the bona fide spiritual master, by the shastras, by the sadhus, where to put our faith, then we will put our faith where we should not put our faith. Namely, the mind. We have been taught by the culture that we've grown up in, this materialistic culture, from our very childhood, we have been taught to put faith in our mind. We weren't consciously or directly told, my dear child, now you must put faith in your mind. We were not told that. But the end result of the training we received, which was namely based on the concept that your happiness is based on your sense gratification. It's basically an animal mentality. That's what we're born with. What is happiness for a child? Sticking everything in his mouth, starting with his mother's breast, and from there he goes to everything else. Stick it in my mouth. That's how I can enjoy, to stick everything in my mouth. So we started off on the basis of simply gratifying the senses. This sense, that sense, this sense, and that sense. But of all the senses, there is a sixth sense, the five knowledge-acquiring senses, and there is a sixth sense also, the mind. Of course, there are the working senses also. The hands, the legs, the tongue, genitals, in this way. There are the working senses also. But the mind is a pivot point for all the senses. Just like in a wheel, you have all the different spokes on the wheel. But in the middle, you have the hub. So the mind is the hub, actually, for all sensual activities. It may come in through the eyes, it may come in through the nose, it may come in through the hands. The knowledge acquiring, the five knowledge acquiring and five working senses are all there. But in Vedic psychology, we understand the mind is the centrist, like information headquarters. It's the control center for all the sensual activities. It's like the It's like the motherboard in the computer of the self. The mind is where it is, like where it's all. That's the headquarters for all sensual activities. It's all coming through the mind. The mind is the capital for sense gratification. The mind is the king of the others, of all the different various senses. The mind is the king. So it is a very degraded position to simply be a servant. As the term is there, go das. But Rupa Goswami, he tells us, no, you should not be go das, should not be a servant of the senses. Rather, you should become Goswami. Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam. You see, the first, second item mentions manasa, the mind. Vacha, there's speech. Manasa, there's mind. Krodha, there's anger. Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam. Jiva, the tongue. Jiva vegam udaro. You see, then the belly, the genitals are there. Etasta vegam udaro. In this way, the different six pushing agents are there. So the mind is a very, very powerful pushing agent, or vegam, which drags us again and again and again and again. Now, Prabhupada gives example of vegam, a pushing agent, just like someone may have to go to pass urine. You see, the vegam is there, pushing, pushing. One may try to ignore that pushing, but sooner or later you have to answer that call of nature, the pushing. So just as the bladder may push us and start screaming at us if we ignore it too long, the senses also will scream at us, demanding sense gratification. They will just start screaming at us, yelling at us. But we have to actually master the art of being Goswamis. And when the senses scream, give me this, we just say, no, you can't have it. It's not good for you. You can't have that. You see, just like on a fast day, Janmashtami, for example, the tongue may say, eat, feed me, feed me. And we say, no, it's Janmashtami. You can't eat. It's Janmashtami. Sorry, tongue, you can't have anything. So see, that's Goswami. The Goswami is controlling his or her senses by only giving them what they're allowed to have. Now, some sense gratification is there. Prabhupada compares it to salt. If there's no salt in the food, it has no taste. If there's too much salt, it also it's unpalatable, you see. Either too much salt or too less salt, it becomes unpalatable. So, sense gratification, a certain amount is required to keep body and soul together. So that is accepted. But if you go beyond what is necessary to keep body and soul together, then what you're doing is you are putting yourself into the false identification with matter. And that false identification with matter is the root cause of all suffering, of all anxiety, of all illusion, of all lamentation, of all fearfulness, of all devastation, of all bewilderment, etc. So that's a real taboo for a Vaishnava, you see, to get into bodily consciousness. It's a taboo for us who are trying to transcend this, you know, material tabernacle identification. For us to overindulge the senses beyond what they need is it's suicidal, actually, for us. This is why Narottam Das prays in that way. Vishaya chadiya seira seira jiya. He says that although I've come to this human form, my Lord, I've spent my life uselessly. I did not care for Radha and Krishna, and so I swallow poison foolishly. We're actually swallowing poison. We're cutting our own throats if we continue to engage in catering to the demands of the mind. we have to be very, very expert in bringing this mind under control. And this skill we have to learn. Just like we become expert at different things. Someone may become expert at playing the drum. Someone may become expert at offering the arti ceremony. Someone may be expert in dressing the deities, or cooking, or distributing books, or, you know, cultivating a Tulsi Devi. So many different varieties of expertise, you see, different devotees may develop. But there's one expertise that each and every one of us has to develop. We absolutely have to develop this expertise. And that is the expertise of controlling our minds. That will make you or break you in Krishna consciousness. If you do not master the art of controlling your mind, you won't make it. I've been in this movement for 35 years, and, you know, we've seen them come and we've seen them go in this movement. Devotees join, they come and they go. How many stay and remain strong and steady? It's a minority, actually, that stay and remain strong and steady. Why? Because they never mastered the art of controlling their mind. Never master the art of controlling their mind. There's no more important skill to develop than to master the art of controlling the mind. You don't allow lust to overtake you. You don't allow anger to overtake you. You see? You don't allow the sensual demands of the tongue, the belly, and the genitals to overtake you. You keep them strictly under your control. You only indulge them insofar as is meaningful in Krishna and relevant and necessary in Krishna's service. It's a simple program. It's only what is necessary, that may be given to the senses. That, according to one's pada, the householder, he can engage in sex life with his wife and producing children. But the brahmacharis and the sannyasis, they cannot pass samana. Strictly avoid. So according to one's position, there are certain regulations for what amount of sense gratification is allowable. And one has to follow those injunctions. According to one's ashram, according to one's status in the society, one's position, I mean to say, in the society of Vaishnavas within the Varnashram system. One is allowed different types of, different degrees of sense enjoyment according to one's position. So one has to, according to one's position as a brahmachari, grihastha, sannyasi, vanaprastha, one has to live in accordance with one's ashram. That is natural, healthy life. We live in accordance with our ashram. In that way, we can gradually cultivate pure devotional service. We don't want to make it too gradual, though. We always say, you know, gradually cultivate. As we've been describing in our recent lectures, we must have a sense of urgency because we don't really know how much longer we will live. We cannot guarantee. Pariksit Maharaj knew he had 7 days. We don't know that we have 7 minutes. Can you be sure you have 7 minutes more to live? Can you be absolutely sure you have 7 more minutes to live? No. We cannot be sure. So, this very minute we should be resolved that at this very moment, as I'm speaking this class or I'm hearing this class, you see, we should resolve that I will keep my mind strictly under control and bring it fully, subjugate it fully in Krishna's service. Otherwise, if I don't have this resolve, then I will continue to revolve in the cycle of birth and death. So your option is resolve or revolve. You see, resolve this uncontrolled mind problem once and for all, or continue to revolve. Resolve or revolve, your choice. Would you rather resolve your mental problems, or would you rather continue to revolve in the cycle of birth and death? It's your choice. You can do what you want, you see. We can give you valid relevant instructions. But we cannot force you. You have to, you're intelligent, you have to decide. Just as Arjuna had to decide. Krishna said, okay, I've given you these instructions, now you do what you like. So, we are receiving these relevant instructions from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now we can do what we like. We can continue to let our minds, you know, go unfettered, like a dog, you know, running around for sense enjoyment, looking for she-dogs, looking for bones, sniffing every here, there, and everywhere. We can continue in that mode if we want. Or we can say, no. I'm tired of being like a dog. You see, just running after my tail, fruitlessly wasting my energy, going nowhere, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Or we can very seriously take up this pathway of Krishna consciousness. Mahajano yena gata sapant. Very seriously take up this pathway. That I want to follow the way of the great Mahajanas who have subdued their minds, who have subdued their senses, who have actually become Goswamis and have thus experienced the highest happiness of pure Krishna bhakti. The result is, if you stick to this pathway with firm determination, with patience, and with enthusiasm, it is guaranteed that you will personally see Krishna face to face, eye to eye. That day will come when you will have a personal darshan with Krishna. You see, Krishna will become your property, your personal property. You will own Krishna. You see. When you fully give yourself to Krishna, completely, not holding even the slightest tinge back, when you come to that point of totally giving yourself to Krishna, then at that point, Krishna will give himself to you. Krishna is ajita. He is unconquerable, but he becomes conquered by his devotee's love. That is Krishna. He's very happy to be conquered by his devotee. He's waiting for that moment when he can be conquered by you. He's waiting for that. But there's no way we'll even get close to that if we allow our minds to continue dictating to us, do this, do that, do this, do that, so many nonsense things. We'll never go anywhere in Krishna consciousness as long as we remain under the control of our minds. Forget it. You won't make any advancement. You'll fall down eventually, I guarantee you, if you remain under your mind's control. So we really have to buckle down and get very, very, very serious about bringing this rascal mind under control by absorbing it completely in the service of Krishna. Bhajahure mana Shri Nanda Nandana Habhaya Charanada Vindude. That is the great acharya of mind control, poet Govindadas. He is our great acharya of controlling the mind. He has written this song, Bhajahure mana. If you always remember this bhajan by Govindadas, then you'll have no trouble controlling your mind. You'll become the master of your mind. You simply remember how he prayed that my dear mind, you see. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, he chastises the mind with shoes 100 times and with broomstick 100 times. But for Govindadas, he has tried a different tactic. He has tried flattering the mind. He has tried the soft approach. The soft and sweet, the charming approach. My dear mind, he says. You simply engage yourself in the service of the divine son of Nanda Maharaj. And Prabhupada has given a very nice purport on this song. And Prabhupada, understanding the inner meaning of the song with complete realization, has described the meaning of the final verse of this song also. Prabhupada explains that the mind may be thinking that Govinda Das, you are taking away all of my sense gratification. Now what will I do? No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling. My dear, what will I do? The mind is saying. So Prabhupada explains the last verse of that song answers this question. Shavana kirtana smarana vandana pada sevana dashare pujana saki jana atmani vedana govinda dasa bilasare. So Govinda Das advises the mind. Mind, no problem. I'm giving you so many things to do. 9 different types of activity, you see. You can hear about Krishna. You can chant Krishna's name. You can remember Krishna. Shravana kirtana smarana vandana. You see, shravana in this way. So, smarana. So in this way, pujana, in doing the puja. So in this way, he's giving the mind all facility. Don't worry about it, mind, that you're not going to have anything to do, you're going to become bored, you're going to become frustrated. No problem, mind, I'm going to give you ample things to do 24 hours a day. You see, I'm going to give you the Krishna consciousness movement that you can dive into and have your mind absolutely, totally, completely absorbed in nectar 24 hours a day. This Krishna consciousness movement, what does it mean? It means 24 hours a day nectar. That is the meaning of our ISKCON. ISKCON means 24 hours a day nectar. That is ISKCON. That's what ISKCON. Of course, it stands for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. But what does it mean? It means 24 hours a day of uninterrupted nectar. That is the meaning of our ISKCON. Okay. So, all we have to do is sport in the waves of this ISKCON ocean of nectar and invite everyone else to come. As they say, and there's an old English in America, there's a saying, come on in, water's fine, they said. Somebody's, all the young boys are swimming in the lake, and one boy, he doesn't want to, he's thinking, well, maybe the water's too cold. He's just sitting there watching the other boys sporting in the water. And the boys all say to the other boy who's sitting on the shore, they say, come on in, the water's fine. That's a saying in English. So, we're inviting the whole world. Come on into this ISKCON nectar. It's absolutely sublime. Come on in. That's our invitation to everyone. So, by joining this wonderful Krishna consciousness movement, founded by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, actually founded by Krishna Himself on the chariot, but expanded worldwide by Srila Prabhupada. By joining this wonderful Krishna consciousness movement, fully dedicating one's heart and soul to this society 24 hours a day in all time, places, and circumstances, then one will taste the sweetest nectar and the mind will naturally be controlled. Param drishtva nivartate. You see. If you just try to give the mind nothing like the Mayavadis do, it's not going to work. Look what happened to Vishwamita Muni. He tried to give his mind nothing. And even though he became such a powerful yogi, as soon as Indradev sent that heavenly courtesan there, Menaka, it was over. All of his austerities were finished. Of course, they had a beautiful daughter, Shakuntala, but still, you know, his austerities were over. You see? And on that pathway of yoga, you can't be a grihastha and achieve perfection. You see? So when he cohabited with Menaka and had a child, it was the end of his spiritual life. It was finished. This pathway of Krishna bhakti, this bhakti yoga, is so much more powerful. On this pathway, you can take a wife. You can have children. You see? Without interrupting, it can even enhance your pathway back to home, back to Godhead. It probably have taken is in the mood of of service. It can actually will enhance one's pathway home, back to home, back to Godhead. So, if we take all these activities very nicely, then the mind will no longer be a problem for us. The mind will, instead of being our worst enemy, it will become our best friend. When one comes to that stage of Krishna consciousness, you can make spiritual advancement simply by associating with your own mind. Can you imagine such a state where you can make advancement just by associating with your own mind? Well, that state is available. We reach a certain stage of spiritual advancement when the mind is fully trained up and fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Then we will make spiritual advancement simply by associating with our own mind. Such a state you can be anywhere. You can be sitting on an 8-hour airplane ride and totally relishing the nectar, just associating with your mind. So this is a very important point. To understand that the mind is the root cause of lust, anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. And these things added together equal bondage to fruitive activity. That's why we have to completely detach ourselves from the demands of the mind. Stop putting any faith in the mind. We should not allow the mind to dictate to us. That's why we require a spiritual master. Our spiritual master dictates to us, do this, don't do that. We take the words of our spiritual masters, our life and soul. Whatever you say, Gurudev, that's it. I'm simply your property, I'm your eternal servant. You do with me as you like. You see? We submit to our spiritual master. And that immediately liberates us from the mind. When we start, we want to have our own little independence. Well, I think I'll do this, I think I'll do that. Think. Then we remain under the influence of the mind. This is why we have to seek out a bona fide spiritual masters. Eva Bhikkhus Chet, Mundaka Upanishad, tells us you must have a spiritual master. In Sanskrit grammar, there are different verbal endings. And there is one which is called vidhi-lin. And vidhi-lin, form of the verb, means compulsory. So in this particular verse, in the Madhaka Upanishad, tad-viganartam sagurume va bhigat-chet, that is the vidhi-lin form of the word. And the vidhi-lin form means you don't have any choice. It's not an option. You must, absolutely must, go to the spiritual master and surrender to him. Mundaka Upanishad. So that will bring a quick end to the mind's shenanigans, its nonsense. A quick end to the rascal mind's rampage. And we surrender to a bona fide spiritual master. Fully. Without any reservation, without any hesitation. So, we can stop here. And we can ask the assembled Vaishnavas if any of you have some questions. Be happy to try to answer them. Have you fully understood everything we've said? Everything made sense? It all made sense, what I said? Full to you. Everything made sense? Yeah. Okay.
You said that that Krishna is giving forgetfulness and remembrance.
Yes.
So is the super soul controlling? I mean, is she super soul controlling the mind in the sense that she is, you know, giving you the pictures and whatever comes to the mind?
The super soul is sitting right there as the next door neighbor of the soul. In your heart. So he is actually, he is Krishna. So that super soul, that Krishna, that is Krishna. There's no difference between the super soul and Krishna. He is Krishna. So that Krishna, that super soul Krishna, seated beside you, he's giving you. If you want to remember Krishna, then he's giving. If you want to forget Krishna, he's giving. If you want to rob a bank, he's also giving you the intelligence how to do that. Whatever your inclination is, the super soul will give it. Does that answer your question? You don't appear satisfied with my answer. Fully satisfied. So.
No, my question was if the super, like the super soul, she is. If I have a desire, and she's fulfilling the desire.
Now she super is, soul.
I'm not the controller. You know, then I set the desire, and everything else is done by the super soul. Or isn't it?
Super soul is a is a facilitator.
Yeah.
He facilitates.
Yeah.
So according to your desire, he facilitates.
So is he like outside she's arranging everything? Is he also like on the mental platform doing this with the mind?
So he's saying that super soul is in a way controlling the mind also, because he fulfills all the desires.
No. You are the one who has the option of controlling your mind or not. Super soul doesn't control your mind. You either control your mind, or you allow the material nature to control your mind. That's your position. You see, the super soul is just there. The choice of going towards Krishna or away from Krishna is yours. And once you, and whichever choice you make, if you chose to go to Krishna, the super soul directly helps you to do that. If you choose to go away from Krishna, then the energy of the super, the material nature is actually the energy of the super soul, because Krishna is the super soul. So that material nature, then, the super soul, through the agency of the material nature, will then divert you in so many ways. You know, with Darwin's theory, and you know, the Big Bang theory, atheism. Krishna, from within the heart, through the agency of the material nature, will give you so many arguments to prove that there is no God. If you want to deny the Lord and enjoy your senses without any feeling of guilt, and that's why they deny God's existence. They want to be accountable for their sinful activities. People who are addicted to sin, they like to become atheists. Because now I can sin and say, just like, you know, there's no, I'm not accountable for it. I can sin as much as I want, I don't have to pay the price. Is your question answered yet? It is, okay, good. You had some questions?
My question is this. That my Krishna consciousness, our mind can be controlled automatically, then why we should have to put so much endeavor on the mind?
You're saying in Krishna consciousness the mind can be controlled automatically. Why do we have to put so much endeavor onto the mind? Well, if you're controlling it automatically, you don't need to. If it's being controlled, in other words, just like now you're sewing, doing some sewing work, by focusing on your sewing work and not even thinking about your mind. The point is, if you can be so absorbed in activities that your mind is automatically controlled, you don't have to worry about it. But if if you're at the stage where you can be fully absorbed 24 hours a day in Krishna's service, you don't have to worry about the mind anymore. If your mind is always thinking about service, well, it's become your best friend. It means your mind is controlled now. But that's not that's not the experience of neophyte devotees. You must be an advanced devotee. If you're simply absorbed in service all the time, your mind's only thinking of service, then that means you're an advanced devotee.
What I'm saying, that when one is engaged in the devotion service, it's mentioned in the scripture, when one fully engaged in the service, the mind is controlled.
Yeah, but if you're only partially engaged in service, that the mind is partially, you see, if you're 100% absorbed in bhakti, then the mind is automatically controlled. That's a fact. But if your absorption in bhakti is only 50%, then that means your mind is 50% uncontrolled. If you're 99% absorbed in bhakti, that means your mind is 1% uncontrolled. If the mind is even slightly uncontrolled, there's always a danger of being carried away. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the senses on which the mind focuses can indeed carry away a man's intelligence. What is the Sanskrit? Yes, so that verse is given there. It's a great warning. Everything may be going very nicely, but if the mind is even slightly uncontrolled, all it takes is one little sense out of a beautiful woman, you know, some aroma, some old favorite song from the old days, some old Beatle hit, or, you know, it could be anything. He could just grab you and just carry you away. So one has to be very careful to bring the mind completely, to absorb it 100% in Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day. From the moment you wake up in the morning to the moment you take rest at night, one has to always see that the mind is, that I'm nicely engaged in Krishna consciousness. If one is doing that, the mind is automatically controlled. Questions more? Yes.
So I understood that our mind is controlling, senses are controlling our mind.
And you're asking if
I control the senses, then I control mind.
Yeah, if your senses are, well, the mind is one of the senses. It's the sometimes called the 11th sense. There's 5 working senses, 5 knowledge acquiring senses, and the mind is the 11th sense. So if your other senses are fully absorbed, then the chances are your mind is also, but you know, the mind could be checking out some other scene, you know, beyond what's happening right there with your senses. So it's not that if the 5 working senses and the 5 knowledge acquiring senses are fully absorbed, then the mind is necessarily fully absorbed. You could be running on 2 tracks, you know, your eyes, your ears, your nose, everything is doing some devotional service, but yet your mind is going off somewhere else at the same time, on another track.
Okay. And then what is the position of the intelligence?
What is it?
What is the position of the intelligence?
The intelligence is a higher position beyond the mind. The intelligence is a matter of understanding. The intelligence is where you actually comprehend and understand things. The mind is compared to an on-off switch. Accept, reject, accept, reject, accept, reject. The intelligence is a higher platform. Actually, the intelligence is the next door neighbor of the soul. It's very close to the spiritual platform. The intelligence is where we actually understand things. The intelligence is what you can use to bring your mind under control. The intelligence is compared to the mother, and the mind is compared to the naughty child, or the well-behaved child if it's been properly trained by the intelligence. So you gain intelligence by hearing the Vedic wisdom, you see, by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. You gain intelligence. You become very powerful in your intelligence by hearing the Bhagavatam. And then you apply this intelligence then to bring the mind under control. That's the technique. Hear nicely and you become very intelligent. You become super intelligent by hearing. And then you use that intelligence to bring your mind under control. Questions more? Yeah.
Sometimes it seems to me that there are 2 different types of mind. One mind is the subtle element, and Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita in the 7th chapter that there are these 8 elements.
Okay.
And
the other one?
And on the other hand, there is it is a real sense what can be trained like a hand. I can train my muscles.
There's only one mind.
I can train. Yeah.
Well, there is this, of course, there is a spiritual mind in the spiritual world. Also, I mean, there's the material element of mind, but also, it's not that the people in the spiritual world are mindless. There's also the pure spiritual mind, the pure spiritual intelligence as well. But in the material world, there's one element called the mind. And what's the, I don't understand what there could be something else. How there could be something else.
Just thinking about gross.
Hmm?
Gross material senses and subtle mind. Subtle mind.
So for me is the question, I can train my muscles. I can train my eyes. This I can train to see better, to hear better.
You can train your mind also.
I can also train my mind. But my senses, they are under the control of the devas. And my
of the devas?
Yeah. This was, or is it not that way?
Well,
I read this.
No. If you're a devotee, they're under your control. When you become a devotee, your senses become under your control. That is the meaning of Goswami.
But I read that the eyes are under the control of Agni.
Yes, but you get a certain, in terms of their blinking and things like that, yeah. But in terms of whether you can look at the deity or you can look at a woman, that's under your control. You see? There's a certain amount of power sharing there. It's the fact that demigods will still force you to blink. Even when you become a Goswami, you know, the demigods have some power still, and you still have to blink your eyes. Even when you're looking at the deities, you blink. You see, the blinking goes on. That is under the control of the demigods. But what you're looking at between the blinks, that you have control over. Are you looking at every beautiful woman that walks down the street, or are you looking at the deities? You're looking at how to spread this movement. You see? So whatever portion of the eye, movement of the eyes you have control over, that you must take full control. And a certain amount of the physical activities of the body always remain under the control of the demigods. That's a fact. But you should take as much power as is allotted to you, as is available for you. You have to take that full measure of power under your control.
Yes, thank you. Or was it a question? Was it a question? No, it was not a question. Yes, sir.
You were just saying he was thinking, well, you had a question. You had a question for him. I said, no, he's asking every day you're listening to him.
Yeah.
So is everything clear?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Does anybody else have any questions? Everybody's understood everything, all the obstacles. Everyone's smooth sailing now, all the obstacles have been cleared in the pathway back to home, back to God. No one's feeling any obstructions on the pathway, everyone's just smooth sailing, yeah?
I have in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is also saying, in Bhagavad Gita, I don't know where, Krishna says that he also created fear.
Created
fear.
Fear.
Yes, he said, I am the cause of fear.
Okay, yeah, Krishna is the cause of everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why does he say in that particular way that he is also the cause of fear? Then, when he created fear, then I'm thinking, then he created it by a special purpose.
Yeah, of course, there's, you know.
To have fear.
There's also, I mean, there's different sorts of fear. There's spiritual fear also, which makes things exciting, drama, you know, suspense. Just like when Krishna was completely being wrapped up in the coils of Kaliya serpent. The Brijavasis were in a state of total fear and devastation, except, of course, for Balaram, who was just standing there smiling. So he knew what was going on, but so there is also fear in the spiritual world, in the pastimes of Krishna. That fear creates rasa or variety of taste. course, in the material fear is there. That's the fear that's the problem. That the fearfulness we have of material existence, you know, being in a state of fear, which is a very miserable state to be in, to be afraid, is a very miserable condition. So that is a special blessing of Krishna, that you wanted to, you know, imitate me and be the supreme, thinking you could pull it off, but now you're just in a state of fear, so this should be a good lesson for you, you know, to come back to your original nature, which is to be my servant. So fear is our friend. There's nothing which is actually our enemy in this world, because everything is the arrangement of Krishna to bring us back to Him. There's nothing which is acting outside of the direction of Krishna. Everything's under His control. He has the material nature and the spiritual nature, and both are engaged in His service. The material nature is there to cause us so much anxiety and torment and fear that we just can't take it any longer. We say, I can't, there's got to be something better than this. I want out. I want out of here. God help me. Get me out of here.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Question?
What is the reason that not everybody wants or likes to hear about Krishna?
What was it?
Can you speak, please?
What is the reason that not everybody or like to hear about Krishna?
Why does not everyone like to hear about Krishna?
Yes.
Yes. Actually, everyone likes to hear about Krishna, but for some, that tendency is very much gone to sleep. It's been covered by so much lust, anger, and greed. Any pious person, any innocent, open-hearted person will find the topics of Krishna very, very pleasing. But if someone is in a mood of envy against God, as Krishna Himself states something which is at least partial answer for your question. He says, avajananti mangmuda manushim tanumashrutam parangbhavam majananto mamabhuta maheshvaram. He says, fools deride me when I stand in this human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme Lord of all that be. So the answer is that some people don't want to hear about Krishna because they're mudha, they're a fool. You see? Anyone who is a wise person, any person who's actually wise, who is jnani, who's actually a wise person, will be very eager to hear about Krishna because he knows that by hearing about Krishna, all of my anxieties will go away. By hearing about Krishna, I will taste the sweetest nectar at every minute. Ambrosia just being poured into my ears, you see. Any jnani, well, not a true jnani, not one of these impersonal so-called jnanis, but someone who really knows things as they are, you see, he will take great pleasure always in diving deep into that ocean of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. He can go on hearing for millions of years these topics and just dive deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Actually, your question is also answered by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. No, Arjuna answers it. He says, O Rishikesha, the whole world becomes joyful by hearing your name except for the demons who go running here and there. So only the grossest demon. Actually, everyone is attracted to hearing about Krishna, with the exception of those persons who are demoniac, who are envious. And they just can't stand it. They say, I want to get out of here. I can't stand this talk about Krishna. You see? So, it's only because they're envious. Those who are envious, they cannot tolerate this Krishna Katha. And why they are envious, that we have been discussing previously. They're simply misusing their free will. They're simply misusing their free will. Everyone's nature is to love God and to serve God. But for that love to exist, the choice not to love must also be there. So in those rare cases when someone chooses not to love Krishna, they then enter into a state of mind called envy, where they don't want to hear about Krishna because they think, I am Krishna. You see? If I'm thinking that I'm God, then why would I want to hear about Krishna? Because Krishna is not me. If I'm thinking that I'm God, then I want to hear you glorifying me, you see, instead of glorifying Krishna. The envious person who thinks that he's God, he just wants to hear himself being glorified. And this is why Prabhupada Sarasvati gives us this insider secret on how to be successful preachers. He says, you approach the materialistic person, you bow down at his feet, and you flatter him 100 times. And then you've got his attention, you see. Because he thinks he's God. That's why he came to this world. So you start telling him, oh my dear sir, you're so handsome, your tie looks so nice, your shoes are so well shined. I've heard you have a very good reputation here in Germany for being a very pious man, for being a very powerful man, for being very kind-hearted. And in this way, he just going glorifying. He says, yes, yes, yes. You see, he's very happy to hear his glories, so-called glories. You see. Why? Because he thinks that he's God. You see. So, the problem is that he can never become satisfied by doing that. I have a practical experience. I don't know, you know, but back in the 60s, there was one famous singer from the San Francisco era called Janis Joplin. Famous rock and roll singer. She was from Austin. She had been previously lived in Austin, where I was living at the time. So there was some kind of reunion, birthday party, and she came to attend it. And here she was coming in, you know, the famous, you know, the hometown girl from Austin who now went to the West Coast and became a big name, you know, in the music scene, Janis Joplin. So then she came in to attend the birthday party, and the photographers were there, you know, shh, shh, shh. And you could see that, you know, being a celebrity, that becomes painful. You know what she told the photographer? She said, please, have mercy. I mean, she was so miserable. Even though she is being glorified, you know, we want your photograph so we can distribute it. It was just painful for her, you see. To be a celebrity had become painful, and she actually died shortly. I think she committed suicide or something, a drug overdose. She didn't last long after that, you know. She was just miserable. She was in a tormented. Everywhere she goes, they're snapping her photographs, you know. She was miserable, the poor girl. Miserable, even though she was a big name. Money, prestige. But she was miserable because we're actually meant to hear about Krishna. We may go on for some time thinking, yes, I'll become rich, I'll become famous, everyone can glorify me. But we can never be satisfied in that position because that's not our position. We are Krishna Das. That is our position. The only thing that can really ever satisfy us is if we dive into this glorification of Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then we will just derive ever-increasing nectar at every minute. Ever-increasing nectar, just like the cowherd boys, you see. They were just amazed at what Krishna did. All they could do was think about what Krishna was up to and how they can, you know, play with Krishna. They would come home at night to their mother and father and they'd say, Mataji, 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 we were in the forest today and this big demon came. Krishna killed him. They were just totally in a state of awe. That this Krishna is doing this, Krishna is doing that, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. You see? In the West, in the world, in this material world, we try to elevate somebody to the position of Krishna sometimes. You know, we have our imitation Krishnas here, like we had the Beatles, you know, Beatlemania, you know. I remember when Beatlemania hit, it was unbelievable. It's for the girls were the ones who were really into it in those days, when the first hit. Riding home on the bus, that's all I could hear about, you know, all the girls were talking about, which one do you like the best? Well, I like George, or I like Ringo, you know. It was just all Beatle, 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 Beatle. All you could hear on the bus home from school was the Beatles. So we try to artificially, because we desire to have a superhero that we can totally absorb ourselves in hearing and chanting about, if we don't know about Krishna, we'll try to invent someone to take Krishna's place. You see? But then what happened? The Beatles broke up. You see? They couldn't handle all the fame and the glory, and they broke up and fight, bitter fighting. You see? So, if you... And we're really looking. Everyone is hankering for that superhero, you know, who always remains the superhero, who never breaks up, who never falls down, who never loses his power, who never loses his beauty, who never becomes, you know, grossly attached to material sense gratification. You see, we're all looking for that Superman that we can worship eternally and talk about and serve and love forever, forever, and have a relationship with forever and forever and forever. And there's only one person who can really do that, and that's God, Krishna. No one else is able to do it. All the imitations we may bring, Superman, you see. But the kryptonite does him in. You see, we cannot be set aside ultimately to anyone but Krishna. He's the only person that we can fully dedicate ourselves to. Because everybody else is just a cheap imitation, like Pondraka, you know. So anyway, we thank you all very much. I'm going a little over time, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, but sometimes Krishna consciousness is so ecstatic that we forget about time, you know. Just forget about it. That becomes, you know, conspicuous by its absence. But it's still there. I can see the clock ticking away. And we have our schedules. So we thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.